You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Did you how'd you find that last episode with Michael Osaki? Were you able to watch it?
Yeah, I did. I caught all of it. I mean, it was really interesting to hear the point of view of an actual appraiser. I mean, my collection is not as rare, so my appraiser is Card Ladder. Like, that kind of tells me what my cards are worth. But just hearing like some of the items he's seen, like the Babe Ruth deathbed autograph, I was not expecting. So yeah, it was awesome. It was just unique, like a different take from the hobby. So I appreciated it.
The deathbed auto. It's funny how you name
that's
it.
That's what it would be slabbed with. The PSA slab would say deathbed auto.
Deathbed auto for sure, for sure. So as you probably heard me, man, well, as I've told you, I'm under the weather.
Yes.
So we're gonna not go for like 2 hours as we often do. I'm actually just gonna quickly. I've got my my cough medicine here. This is Benelin, sleep time dry cough night, nice. Which pretty much explains what I got. So I'm going to I got to take some of this, man. So we've gone live, but I got to take some cough medicine, guys, because. Yep.
Spoonful of sugar.
Yeah, there we go. There's one. I'm gonna take like three of these. This stuff's actually pretty tasty, believe it or not.
Just swig the bottle.
Here we go. Commercial for Benelin right here, right?
This is a paid sponsorship.
Yeah. One more. I gotta last through the show.
I know. Me too. Listen, I got my coffee. It's East Coast time by me.
Right. That's right. Well, we're starting a bit earlier than we've planned, so that's kind of good.
True. Yep.
That should help. So. Let's start off by just talking about I got to meet you at the National this past August. That was pretty cool. How was your experience there?
It was awesome. So it was my first time at the National, but I mean, it's going to throw me off all show. So I have to put it out there. You always look amazing, Jeremy. Like I tune in, if not live, I try to tune in on Sundays. You look extra handsome tonight. So I have to say, you are a tall drink of water. I mean, I met you at the National and you're, you know, 7'5" or 7'8", whatever you are. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that shirt just looks phenomenal. So you
like the shirt, huh?
Yeah. Love it. The National was great. I mean, I think it's so cliche at this point, cause everyone has said it's just overwhelming and like, but that's the only way to describe it. I mean, I was there for all 3 days or all however many days it was. And I still feel like I didn't get to see everything. Every card you ever want to see in person is there, and again, cliche, but my favorite part was the people. I just kind of meeting people that I've been talking to for the last year or two online. People whose content I've been consuming, it was, you know, great getting to meet you and, you know, showing you slab shelf, showing you like my one purchase from the National. So it was awesome.
Well, that was my next question. What did you pick up at the National?
It was like a business trip for me. So anyone who saw me at the National saw me with like a slab shelf under my arm, kind of, you know, just showing it off at tables, which was great. But it wasn't until the last day that I actually like looked for cards for myself. And I picked up one card on the last day and I was actually nervous. I was going to go to the airport, like without buying anything. And I have a very specific targeted list of like cards I'm looking for. So there's like 15 cards that are left on my go-to list. And I was able to knock one down and I did get to show you. I'm going to show it to you in person. I'm going to show it to you and the crew, but it's the 33 Gaudi Gehrig in a PSA 1. And I actually like these older cards that have been loved a little bit, especially with good eye appeal. So this was my one National purchase. This was
very nice. I do remember you showed it to me there. So that's the only pickup you made.
Literally, it was the only, I bought a couple cards for my kids, just so that like they could have some cards to play around with. But that was like the only card that I bought for my PC. Yeah,
that's a great card. And I mean, I can see the cards behind you, and I can make out several of them, especially the ones on that side of you. I can pick, yeah, that side. Yeah, I can pick out
what your vision is.
So I can pick out the bottom eight, the middle eight, the top. I can't really see; it's kind of cut off. I guess just that we don't have that in the frame. But
yeah,
I can definitely pick out. I think I can name every card, all 16 of those cards, except the. Oh no, that's the Gehrig. You got the Jim Brown underneath it.
Yeah.
Then you got the Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
The Nolan Ryan underneath that. The Koufax.
Yeah.
Dr. J.
Mm-hmm.
Unitas.
Yep.
Wayne Gretzky.
Nice.
Coming over here, you got the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Mario Lemieux, Michael Jordan. That's the Jeter SP.
Yeah.
It's hard to see. Kobe.
You're doing great.
Kobe and, yep. Well, I can't tell that next one right now. Kobe. But on the other side of that one, that's Vince Carter.
Yeah.
I can't tell. Oh, no, I can't tell the second one or the fourth one, actually. LeBron?
So these two are more modern. So this is the LeBron Topps Chrome 2003. Yeah. And this one's one of my favorite. I just think one of the most underrated cards in the hobby is the 98 SP Authentic Peyton Manning.
Oh.
Number to 2000. It's one of my favorite cards.
Great card, for sure. That cough medicine sure is working for me.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It'll kick in eventually. You'll be fine.
Yeah. So, okay, let's say hi to the crew. We got Hatrix. Good evening. Hey to you. We got Troy, Jeremy, and Slab Shelf Guy. Awesome after hours in store, even with sickly Jeremy. Thank you. I appreciate that, Troy. Busby says, been at the Tulsa State Fair. Missed the first show. I'm glad I made it for this. We're glad to have you, Daniel. First one, we're doing a bit of shorter shows this weekend just because I am sick. We got my guy, Victor, the rookie card specialist. Victor, great to see you. Thanks for joining. SML, good evening to you. Tom Bullard, good evening. And Troy says, well, I guess John has all the goats. Where is the Brady? Do you have a Brady back there on the other side, maybe?
I do not have a Brady. I do not. I mean, I don't have every card. I have, there's still some cards on my wish list, but I do not have a Brady.
Is it on your list?
It's actually, honestly, it's pretty far down. Most of the targets that I have are all vintage. So Brady's not there yet. Although if you ask some people at the National, they think that 2000 and that era is vintage, which is a little,
it depends what your perspective is, right? I mean, I'm not going to say it's not true. It's really, you can define that for yourself at the end of the day, but you mentioned targets. Are you willing to share what your kind of top five want cards are right now?
Yeah, sure. Actually, it's funny. So I have a 7-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son, and I've gotten them into cards a little bit too. Like they can name these cards. Like they might not know, like my son might not know like all the letters of the alphabet, but he knows like the Derek Jeter rookie card. So what I did was I actually printed out and I grayed out the cards that we need to get for like our collection. And then they colored in the Gehrig because I came home from the National. So, I'm very jealous because obviously you can see the Jackie Robinson, the Satchel Paige, DiMaggio, Ted Williams. You got Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle, Rose, Bill Russell, Big O, Jerry West, Wilt, Namath, and Walter Payton. So that's, you know, and I'm very proud of my collection, but these are like the must-haves.
Yeah.
These are the cards that I want, but those are like nice-to-haves. These are like the all focus is on getting to these cards.
But that's a great list there that you have.
I'll keep you posted how I do.
And what a fun way to get your kids involved too, right? As nice, you get them, they can color them in. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Let's see. Tom Bullard has something exciting. He says, I'm on cloud nine right now. Just checked my IG and saw Andre Reed, tagged him. Can't wipe the smile off my face. Small gestures can mean the world, y'all. A legend and one of my all-time faves growing up. That's cool. Congrats on that. Very cool. Jeremy Allen, hello to Dallas. Fire, good evening and thank you. Yeah. Hoping I'm going to get well in the next couple of days here. So, okay. So you do slab shelf. You are what I called a hobbypreneur in one of my posts today.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, you've got this going on. I think it's interesting for you to share with people what it's like, what your journey has been like from the moment that you kind of came up with actually, let me ask the question this way. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with the idea for slab shelf?
So I, it's a fun story, right? So I was a big hobby enthusiast. I was super into the hobby. And then like a lot of people, I kind of drifted away from the hobby for a while, went to college, kind of entered the real world. And when I got back in, I quickly realized that grading cards was like the standard. Like when I was collecting in the, you know, most throughout all the 90s and even early 2000s, grading was the exception. So when I got back into it, I realized that every card really to kind of get the value had to be graded. So I did what everyone did. And I sent, you know, like my best 50 or 60 cards to PSA. I got them back in like 3 months, which I thought was a long time at the time, but you know, everyone would kill for that now. And I got them back. I was pretty pleased with a lot of the grades, and I have my basement sports cave. And I was just looking for what to do with them. How am I going to display them? I didn't want to keep them locked up in a box. I wanted to be able to look at them. And I couldn't find an option that worked for me. It didn't mean that there weren't options out there, but just like for what I was looking for, I couldn't find it. So I made something. Like I made a shelf. I went to Home Depot. I got some wood. And I made a shelf out of wood that was pretty terrible, right? Like it did the job. Some of the ones on this side are actually like the original wooden slab shelves. And I sent some pictures to some of my buddies and said like, hey, like look at the cards I got back from PSA. And they were like, that's awesome. But like, where'd you get that display? Like, I'm looking for something like that. And I had enough people ask me that I said, all right, I might have something here. So then I started posting some pictures on Facebook groups and asking people's opinions of like, would you buy something like this? Like, what would you pay for it? And there was just enough feedback of people saying, yeah, like I have slabs, I have graded cards. Like, I don't want to spend a ton of money to display them. You know, I don't want these like cheap, flimsy options. Like I would like something. So I just got to the point where I said, you know what, if I'm ever going to do something, like now's the time. There's 10 million cards backlogged at PSA. So there's going to be obviously demand to do something with these cards. And it's been a lot of fun, man. It's been a hell of a ride. I've learned a lot. It's my first endeavor in, you know, manufacturing, which was a bit of a learning curve just because it's the first time I've done it. But I have a sales and marketing background. So like that part was kind of fun. Just to let you know, state of the state, it's been a long pre-sale and obviously some delays just because of materials, and everyone kind of knows about plastic being in high demand and short supply. But we should be shipping out in the next week, 2 weeks top. So for everyone who has purchased a slab shelf, first and foremost, thank you very much for your support and for your patience. And we hope to see your cards on your slab shelf very, very soon.
That's cool, man. So how many slab shelves are you about to ship out, or arrange if that's competitive information?
A lot. So it's in the four figures, right? So we're like in the low thousands. But when I first started this, I didn't know if I'd sell 2 or 10. So we're like really happy with where we are, but I'm not really going to be happy until people have them. Like once people start posting like, hey, like here's my cards on my slab shelf, then I'm going to be really happy. And then we're going to like really turn it up a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So what has the response been like from, you know, you said that the National was a business trip for you. What was the response like? What sort of support did you get there?
Yeah. So I had no idea what to expect. I mean, I didn't have a table or a booth. I knew some people that had tables. So like, hey, like you can set one up at our table and leave some info. Like the guys at Bleeker Trading are amazing, Mark and Jacob and those guys. So there was one like at the Bleeker table. It's kind of like my East Coast home base there in the city. But it was amazing. Like I had my slab shelf shirt on. I had my slab shelf under my arm, and the amount of people that stopped me and they're like, oh, like I've seen this on Instagram. Like, are you selling them? Like, I think it looks pretty cool. So that's been great. And then I was just talking to dealers. I wanted to get their feedback, especially ones that had not heard of slab shelf before. I would tell them like, just grab 10 slabs out of your case, throw them on, like, let me know what you think. I asked real collectors. Like I'm a collector. So like the reason I wanted to develop slab shelves, because from my standpoint, it's something that I wanted to do. So I was hoping other people agreed. But yeah, like talking to the dealers, a lot of dealers like, this is great. Like this would be great in my shop to either display cards, And I think a lot of my customers would want this. So the feedback was really positive.
Did any dealers sort of stick out? Anyone you want to shout out that are really helping you launch this thing?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, especially from the national, Andy from IndyCard Exchange was amazing. You're going to see Slab Shelf in IndyCard Exchange soon. 101 Card Shop in Ohio, John English Vintage down in Tennessee. Jamil from Shop Millie Pops has been like a great sounding board. So I mean, and I'm missing people, so like I apologize if I'm not shouting you out, but yeah, there's just been a lot of people that have been helpful from either, you know, kind of being a mentor and a bit of a guide, and then also people that are like, yes, like I want to partner with you. So that's been great.
Very cool. Let's go to a couple of comments and questions we have here. So Daniel Busby says, my studs in my wall are 16 inches apart and the holes in the slabs you make 12 and 16 inches apart? If so, do they hang up?
Yeah. So the back panel of the slab shelf has two holes in it. The back panel is 15 inches wide. So the two holes are about an inch and a half in from each side. So, and they really, it's lightweight. So even a heavy duty 3M hook, if you don't want to drill it in, should do the trick. So, cause I've experimented every which way hanging them up in my basement. So you should be good.
Yeah. And I can verify that it is a light unit. So it's not like you're going to rip through your drywall. Exactly. If you're not in a stud, for sure. Tom says, I definitely need to pick up a slab shelf. I like them over another option myself. Very nice. Very nice.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Tom says, I like that it's not specific to PSA or a certain slab. Are there any slabs or holders that won't fit?
I have not met a slab that is not fit yet. So, PSA, Beckett, SGC, HGA, CSG. So it is fit everything that I've thrown on it. The only thing is, obviously, if you have a taller slab, like a tall boy, it could fit. It just doesn't necessarily fit as uniformly. But any kind of standard slab, whether it's a thick card, patch card, it fits no problem.
And I can actually speak to putting one touches on it. And I can tell you that one touches fit on the top shelf, but not the bottom shelf. Is that kind of how you look at it as
well? Yeah, because it was made specifically for slabs. But the nice thing about the top shelf is if you have kind of a mix of some mags, one touches and slabs, you can put one touches on the top, no problem. And do a little bit of a mix and match for sure.
Yeah, right on. I like this here. Chad says, those look great on display behind you. I just bought two of them now while listening. That's awesome, Chad.
Nice. Thanks, Chad. I appreciate that.
Very
keep
cool.
That going. Keep that train going.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, now we're talking. Yep. JG, this is his comment through both episodes. Have you been in contact with Michael Rubin yet?
I have not yet. It's a good question. I think it's really interesting what he's doing. And I would love to have a conversation with him one day, but I've not spoken to Michael yet.
No, just give him a call. No problem.
I'll call him after this.
So you said that you have a sales and marketing background. How have you been applying that to Slab Shelf?
So when we did the launch, I knew the product. I knew like what I wanted to say about it and how I wanted it to be perceived. But, you know, there's a lot out there, right? So I was like, all right, how am I going to make some noise and really make sure it breaks through a lot of the clutter? So I think that's where my background came into play. And like my whole thing with sales and marketing, whether I'm doing the sales and marketing or I'm being marketed to, is really personalization. Like I want to know my customer and my clientele and make sure that they know like, hey, I'm paying attention to you. Like I'm listening to what you're saying. So basically my strategy was like, I respect a ton of people in the hobby industry. So I kind of handpicked, you know, about 25 people are like, I'd really like their input on Slab Shelf. And if they like it, I think that would just be a great launching point. I was like, but if I just send it to them, they probably get a ton of stuff in the mail. Like how can I make sure this kind of sticks out? So, you know, the nice thing is people do like to show off their collections online. So I really made sure I understood like what their favorite cards were. So when they got this in the mail, they didn't have to go search for their cards. Like they could literally see what their cards were on the slab shelf because I replicated like their, you know, their favorite cards or like, you know, they're kind of the best cards from their PC. So they can instantly put it on and be like, all right, this is what it would look like. And the feedback from that has been fantastic. I mean, it really over exceeded what the expectations were. Like I was hoping to get maybe three or four people to be like, all right, like I'll give you a shout on Instagram or like, you know, let's talk about this. I think this is a cool idea. And I had like 22 people hit me up immediately saying like, this is great. Like, you know, the customization, like, I really like that you paid attention here. So, so that it worked, I'll say that. And I appreciate everyone's feedback on it. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So was I one of those 25? I think I was, right?
You were, my friend. You were.
Yeah. So I showed these before way back when I first received the unit, but I'll show them again. Cause this is, I thought it was really cool. Now, right now there's mine right there behind me. It's got some slabs, some non-slabs on it, but you did send me my slab shelf cards and you, I guess you went through my Instagram page and you found some cards that I'd recently posted.
I stalked you pretty hard. Yeah. You
stalked me pretty hard. And so there's my Crosby Noise Boys mm-hmm. and you've got these vanity slabs. Pretty cool. So you know, it's just cool. You put my Instagram there, slab shelves there, some, yeah. Gem Mint 10, of course, even though it's hand cut, right?
Yep.
So yeah, the Gretzky PMG green, a Gretzky rookie, a Mario Lemieux rookie, Jordan Platinum Portraits.
Yep.
Jordan Jambalaya. And then he also gave me these two here, a Vince Carter rookie and the Stanley Cup from mm-hmm. Panini Flawless. I thought those were awesome. And right away I thought to myself, you know, it'd be kind of cool to trade these with other people who received these.
And they're one of ones. Like they're legit one of ones.
They're one of ones. So if anybody out there received one of John's influencer packages, I think that's what you called them. Yeah. I'm up for doing a swap. Swap one of mine for one of yours. It'd just be kind of fun. Nice.
There are some folks that have been on your show that got it. Like Chris and Christina from Car Ladder. They both got some cards. DJ Ski. I'm probably missing a bunch of people, but there's some people that you could, they're definitely in your network. You could do some cool trades.
Yeah. Right on. Maybe we'll look into doing something like that. All right. Yeah. A couple of comments here. Tom Bullard. Do you think you could make a small attachment that could display company name or be customized and something like that for future ideas? Kind of like a billboard above the shelves to help promote.
Yeah. So I've had a lot of people ask about branding and colors. So we could actually, we're thinking about doing some different colors, team colors, things like that, kind of in phase two. Like right now it's a frosted plastic. So that's what they all look like. But I've actually been talking to a couple breakers because obviously when breakers are kind of breaking cards, they can put a card saver on the bottom shelf and the top shelf, no problem. So they're going to get some like local artists to do some logos on the back. So if you get somebody to like paint, like almost with a graffiti pen, your logo, or, you know, maybe, you know, like a Topps 2020 artist that could do it for you, but like you can do that. The back shelf comes blank and you can put whatever logo or decal on it that you want.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Troy just followed you on Instagram. That's very cool.
Awesome.
And Matt Jones, yeah, I remembers when I got this in the mail. I was excited and loved the cards to display. Yeah, there, it's pretty cool. It's just cool that you actually spent that time to make sure that all these people you sent these to were going to notice it and maybe do something with it and help you market and get the word out, which I'm obviously happy to do.
Yeah.
So, question I have is: this is a single product business right now. Do you have plans to add more products to the product portfolio?
Maybe. I mean, it's kind of like what I said earlier. Like my main focus now is doing this right. Right. Cause I would never want to, you know, dilute it and have a couple products out there, but not have them be perfect. Like I'd rather have one that really hits the nail on the head. So there is the possibility. One thing I love is feedback. Right. So I've been going to a lot of local card shows and bringing the prototypes and just asking people for feedback and asking people, like, put your slabs on it. Like, what do you think? And, you know, people have given me ideas about it, bigger, smaller, higher. So there's definitely ideas. And phase two, you might see some new products come out into the market. But phase one's gotta be complete first. So once we get in people's hands, we'll talk about phase two.
Right. Start with the first product. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Triple V says, any plans for a higher end display case with UV protection?
So literally the same kind of thing, right? Like that's definitely been feedback that I've gotten from some folks. So we're thinking about it. That's definitely one of the, we're thinking about, but I agree, right? Like I, with my basement, I mean, there's no natural light. So my cards that are on the shelves behind me, they're out all the time because there's literally, no windows in here, but you know, if someone does want to display it where there's natural light, you know, that's a real thing you should be thinking about. So, something that we're thinking about too.
So you've been rolling out this business, you're a hobbypreneur. What sort of challenges have you had that have maybe slowed you up or you weren't expecting when you started? I kind of want you to inspire people who might want to start a business, right? So take a chance and be inspirational, if you will. Also, you know, but don't sugarcoat it. What have been some of the difficulties that you've had?
Yeah. So, I mean, Jeremy, you inspire me every Saturday night. So I will do my best to return the favor to your listeners.
I'm just going to mute myself and blow my nose. Excuse me.
Yeah. Blow your nose, hack up a lung, just make yourself feel better. So I think when I first thought of the idea of like, hey, this is something that collectors would like, no matter what you're going to go to market with, if you're going to try the entrepreneurial idea, like just make sure it's something that you're passionate about so that you're looking at it from the lens of your potential customers. And I think, you know, I was lucky enough that I've been in the hobby for, you know, 25, 30 years. So I knew like at least one collector likes this. And then obviously I started going out there. But no matter what, how prepared you think you are or like how good of a plan you have, one piece of advice is just always be flexible and be able to pivot because, you know, you're going to work with a lot of people that, unfortunately, not everything's in your control, right? So whether it's manufacturers or parts or supplies, that as much as you plan for it and as much as you say, you know, I'm going to hit these target dates, you get those emails and those calls of like, well, we're back ordered or, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to make that date. And, you know, my biggest thing is just trying to be proactive and communicate to our customers. Like if this is going to take a long time because of plastic, you know, let's talk about that and say, hey, this is on me. I apologize. I want to get this in your hand just as much as you want to get your cards on it. But just make sure you know the need that you're trying to fill. Like how many people are going to need that, right? Is it very niche or is it something that kind of speaks to everybody? And just do your research. And if people are telling you like this is a need, go for it. If people are telling you, you know, I don't know if I would buy that, then you know, ask them like, what would you buy? Like, don't try to force your idea just because like you think it's a great idea. And I've had to do that too. Like as I thought, you know, I have the best idea ever. As I was going through some of those focus groups, like I did have to make a couple changes, even though I was like, all right, this is not what I think is the best thing. But if enough people are telling you, you know, hey, it should be this amount of cards or like, this is the right, you know, the right way to display them, like, listen. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest piece of advice is just listen and be very open to feedback. I mean, that's probably what's stuck with me through this most, that and being able to pivot when you get some curveballs.
Yeah, it's great advice. You know, I want to add to that, not my own advice, but this Josh Luber, when I had him on the show back in, I think it was early mid-May, maybe it was June or July, I don't remember, when Josh Luber was on.
Yeah.
And you know, he's a hobby entrepreneur as well. And I asked him for a piece of advice. He said, the best advice I can give you is just start. Talk about it and start, right? Don't be afraid to talk about your idea and just start. So when you're doing like a consumer product good like this, you have to have this thing made. You've spoken about manufacturing. How do you go about finding someone to make you this slab shelf?
That's a really good question too. Luckily, I have a good friend of mine that not in the hobby, in a different industry, is also manufacturing a product and is a bit of he's an entrepreneur on his own. So, you know, referrals and kind of personal, connections is huge, right? Like you want to make sure you're working with people that you can trust and listen, the supplies being in a shortage of supplies doesn't have to do with trust. That's just, you know, a problem that you have to deal with, but you want to make sure that the people are reliable. So for me, it was really, you know, having that testimonial of like, hey, I've worked with this person, like they've come through from me before. Because if not, you know, then it's doing your homework and saying like, you know, I like this product. And even if it's not in the hobby industry, like who makes this product? Like, can you kind of reverse engineer it and see who makes it, who markets it, you know, who's their distributor, who designed it. But there's a lot of people that touch these products. It's not just, you know, one person has the idea and one person makes it. I mean, I've worked with a manufacturer for the actual shelf, a different manufacturer for the boxing and the packaging, you know, a different person for the warehousing. So all of this, you know, a shipping provider. So all of this, you just have to be able to be very organized. You need to manage all these relationships. And then hopefully it all kind of works together to get the consumer what they want at the end of the day. You know, website management, design, like all that stuff plays a big part.
So you're kind of like the conductor of the orchestra here, making sure all the moving parts are working in sync, and some are going to be a little slow, especially like, were you competing with PSA for plastic?
I mean, if I was, I lost because PSA was definitely ordering way more plastic than I was. But I mean, I think everybody was like, just there's so many products being manufactured. It's crazy. Like how many times have I seen, like on message boards, like, is anyone selling card savers or top loaders? Like I can't find any anywhere. And it's the same thing. It's cause those are made of plastic and there was just kind of a shortage. It does seem now like I have my materials, like I'm good. And I've already pre-ordered. So like to make sure I'm kind of ahead of it for the next wave, but it seems like they've kind of caught up a bit. So hopefully PSA is, when PSA shut down, I think it helped everybody else in the plastic world.
Yeah. freed some up for everybody else for sure.
Exactly.
Tom Bullard says we are idea guys in here. Yes, please. Lots of ideas, but no directions. So any advice you can give, well, this is old already, like in terms of any advice that you can give would be helpful. So I hope it was helpful. I think it was. I mean, it's, you know, to me, you were almost fortunate to have a buddy who was doing some manufacturing to help you. Like, is it made in America?
It is. So, everything is made and manufactured, designed in the US. I live in North Jersey, right outside of New York City, near like Giant Stadium, Metway Stadium, that area. And it's actually being manufactured in Eastern Pennsylvania. So even being able to like kind of go and see the manufacturing process was key because it's a short drive for me. So yeah, everything's made in the US.
Awesome. Okay. Dan Smith has a question, comment. I make custom wood card stands, all hand sewn. Thanks for the input. Helpful info for sure. Where do you find it best to promote your product?
So I just prefer Instagram just because I think that's where most of the eyes are. I mean, we have Instagram, we have Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and obviously we have an e-commerce website, but Instagram just seems to be where, especially specifically for the hobby, where most of the eyes are. But I mean, you could probably, if you ask somebody else, they might argue that, you know, Twitter or TikTok or there might be another forum, but for me, it's Instagram.
So it's kind of a different sort of question. I'm just going to throw it out there. What do you love about the hobby, John?
That's a great question.
Pretty open-ended.
I mean, I can answer that a million different ways. I'll answer it two ways. The first is like the physical cards, like the actual cards that you have in your PC. What I love about them is they take me back to a very specific moment in time, right? So whether it's a card that I had when I was 7, 8 years old and I remember pulling out of a pack, and it might not be a very valuable card, but just like it was a special card to me. God bless you. You get that feeling of nostalgia of cards that you opened when you were a kid. There's cards that, you know, maybe I went to a show and I bought it with a buddy of mine. Like that card then reminds me of like that time or that show. Like the Lou Gehrig will always remind me of kind of like the COVID national, right? Like the national, you know, when everybody was kind of like so hungry to get together, like I bought that one card. So cards is kind of sparking that memory. I love about the hobby. And then the other, and this was pre-COVID and now is, and it's again, I hate saying the same answer that kind of everyone else says, but it's just so true, is the people and like the friends that you've made because of the hobby, you know, whether in person or literally like from across multiple time zones and you've never really met them before. Some of those connections are just like amazing. to have that in common. So I think both of those things are really what kind of hits home for me.
Yeah, great. Great answer. I love it. And thanks to Troy for the tip and the acknowledgement that, yes, I'm pushing, I'm pushing through this cold that I've had going on about day three here, guys. So
buy some cough drops.
Yeah, I've been chugging the Benelin, so yeah. Thank you, Troy. Much appreciated, pal. Yep. Lapper in the house says, late to the show, but you got an interview with Marc-Andre Fleury. Very nice.
Is that like the old Penguins goalie?
Yeah, he's saying all right. You look like him.
He was a good-looking guy. I'll take that. Thank you.
There is a similarity there for sure. All
right, I'll take it.
Right on, right on. So there's been some news in the hobby lately. And first of all, to the chat, guys, thanks everybody for joining after hours. I'm, what am I, 40, 35 minutes in and just welcoming you. This is John Beyer. What are you, president, CEO, chairman of the board of Slab Shelf?
Slash intern. I mean, I'm literally kind of everything. So yeah, I'm the Slab Shelf guy. That's what people at the National said. They're like, oh, you're the Slab Shelf guy. And I was like, well, my name's also John, but you can call me the Slab Shelf guy.
Yeah. Who else is helping you with the business right now?
So honestly, I would not be able to do this without the support of like my inner circle. Because it's a one man show. But my wife, Kristen is a huge supporter and helps me out greatly, with this, whether it's like actually helping execute some of these ideas or, you know, kind of telling me when I have a terrible idea, you know, if I bounce some ideas off her, she keeps me in check sometimes. And then my brother, who's also way big into the hobby. So I love having that connection with him. But he's also a marketer in the sports world. So he knows cards, he knows sports marketing. He's a great designer. So he's also helped me a lot. If you see the Instagram video where there's like a bunch of cards kind of popping and flashing on the Slab Shelf, my brother did that for me. So, yeah. And then obviously just my circle, my kids help with it, but it's a very, very small kind of local run business.
Yeah. Good. Good for you.
Yeah.
James Riley says, Jeremy, you are the paragon of sports card content. Thank you, James. Very Amen. Nice. Appreciate the comment.
Amen.
My buddy Ken Richardson out of Vancouver, Canada says, those look nice. Is anyone in Canada selling them?
So not yet. I actually am talking to some folks in Canada. Not you. I know other people in Canada other than Jeremy. He's my favorite Canadian. But I am trying to work on a Canadian distribution channel. If you wanted to buy it from Canada, you can. Shipping's just really expensive. And I'm also trying to work with some shipping companies on that. It's just expensive. Jeremy, you can kind of vouch for this. Like even just getting a card on eBay from the US is expensive for you guys.
Yeah,
for but, sure. I am working on that.
Good. Well, let me just like, so Ken actually owns, I believe, four hobby shops in Canada. So he may be interested in carrying them.
Ken, send me a DM. We'll talk.
Ken, his Instagram is on the ticker right now at Slab Shelf. So feel free to reach out to John. I do have a unit behind me, Ken, and I think they're pretty awesome. Like it's just a way to show your slabs. It's a nice, easy, simple way to show your slabs, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it's awesome for sure. For sure.
We use different vernacular, display your slabs. That's a,
what did I say? Show?
Yeah. That's a different company.
God. Oh, of course. Of course. Of course. Display.
But all good. I had some good competition. It's all good stuff. All good.
Let me ask you another sort of open-ended question that I don't know if I've ever asked this question of any guest before, but how has your hobby approach evolved over the last year and a half based on what's happened in the hobby in the world?
That's a very good question. And I think I have like a pretty specific answer. I used to collect a little bit of everything. Like I just, you know, if I thought a card looked cool or if I, you know, kind of liked a player, I would jump in. I used to like to dabble in prospecting and kind of buying young players in season and flipping. I definitely got away from prospecting current players because I think it's gotten a little bit out of control for me. Some of these prices that people are paying for guys that just are completely unproven. Listen, everyone should collect whatever they want to collect, but I've gone a different road. And the list that I showed kind of points to it. I've consolidated a lot, and I've, you know, there's the Netflix show, the Maria Condoing, like the joy of, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but basically it's, you know, she goes into people's houses and talk about, like, you know, the junk that they have in their house. And if it doesn't bring you joy, if it doesn't spark joy, get rid of it. Right. It's a way to kind of minimize. And I had the same approach to my cards. Like, there's cards that I love, and when I hold that card, it brings me joy. Like, that's a keeper. Doesn't matter what the value is. And if I have cards that I look at and I just go like, eh, it's nice to have, like, but do I really need it? I've sold a lot of those cards and have been able to buy kind of some bigger cards that spark joy, that, like, I want to show my kids, and, like, I want my kids to have this one card instead of, like, these 20 kind of so-so cards. So I think consolidation has probably been the biggest thing that I've done, and just kind of set my targets on kind of a couple bigger fish.
Interesting. I think that's a good answer. I mean, you use the word consolidation at the end, and I think, you know, technically that's, I guess, what it is.
Yeah.
But consolidation is almost just the result of culling the collection. And like, I like how you explained it. You go through your collection, you look at each card. Does it make you happy, or is it just something that's maybe other people think is cool, or it's got value? Like, I have a couple cards like that where I'm having this internal battle. Like, I've got, say, a couple $1,000 wrapped up in a card that's a very, you know, it's worth that amount of money for whatever reason. But I look at it and it just doesn't get me all happy. Like, some cards make me very happy to look at them. And it's, but then I get to that point where I say to myself, okay, I don't love the card, but that doesn't mean I can't own it, right? Like, maybe it's good to have for other reasons, like it's going to go up in value. It's going to be a good investment piece. Maybe it's not my favorite card in my collection, but it might be a good investment piece. And I find myself sort of struggling with that. Even right now, there's a couple of cards that are, you know, in my mind, it's like, you know, maybe I should just move those and put them into something else. But then I feel like, oh, I'm going to have that FOMO of, what if that card is, you know, it's as important as I believe it to be. Important and loving it aren't exactly the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not even close, but should I let it go? So culling to me can be a tough process, very tough to decide what cards to take out of your collection and then move those cards into the consolidation process. So it's kind of like two stages there. Does that make sense to you? Or I'm just making this up as I go along.
No, 100%. I mean, I remember I listened to one of your, I forgot when it was, but you were talking about how you kind of dipped your toe into the Pokemon market, right? Because it seemed like that's where a lot of people are going. And then you were kind of like, why do I have this? Like, I didn't watch the show. Like, you don't really have the connection to it. So I think that's a good way to look at it too, is like, what was the purpose of you buying the card? What's the purpose of you holding on to it? Now, if it's, you know, there's going to be some appreciation, then sure, right? Like, then it's a business decision. But if it goes up, are you then going to hold on to it? Or are then you selling it to then buy something else that kind of brings you that joy? So I think like all these factors play into it.
Yeah. Funny enough, all those Pokemon cards I have are going up for sale this month. So
see, amen. There you go.
Yeah. It's not even that I didn't watch the shows as a kid or, you know, when it came out. It's that I actually did watch some of them as an adult, like in the last year, and realized it's just not for me. I just, there's nothing that resonates about it for me. So, yeah.
Jeremy, I worked at my local card shop from like 1994 to 2000. And the amount of like first edition Pokemon boxes I sold for, I think the box at the time cost like $80. Like, it was like, I did not collect Pokemon at all. But I sold people like a Charizard foil, like for, you know, $50, $100. And just, it makes me really want to get in that time machine and shake the younger version of myself and just say,
of course,
just get a whole U-Haul for those Pokemon boxes.
We all have those kicking ourselves stories. Here's a question from Mike, baseball collector. Mike, good evening. Mike says, do you plan on making bigger ones? I have about 4,500 slabs that I need to display. Now, before you answer that, John, my comment to Mike is, Mike, then what happens with the beast? What happens with the beast if you can display all 4,500 cards? But I'll let you take the question.
That, first of all, kudos on 4,500. That's a lot of slabs. That's a lot of plastic. That's why, you know, there was a shortage of plastic, because this guy's got
this guy.
Yeah. It's a pretty easy answer. You just have to buy a lot of slab shelves because they're really versatile. So whether you're hanging them on a wall or on a shelf, if you just line them up side by side or on a wall, you can stack them up high. I mean, I have one shot, I think it's on my Instagram, where I took 9 of them. So it was like 3x3 and it displays, it's about 90 or so slabs. And it you can't even see the shelf. So it literally just looks like there's 90 slabs on your wall. So 4,500, you would just need a lot of slab shelves and a lot of real estate in your, in whatever room you're displaying them in.
Of course. But I'm going to ask it again. Like, do you plan on doing a bigger one? I understand you can just do more, but have you, like, how did you land on a unit that really displays 8 cards? And actually, I can fit 10 on mine.
You can do 10, yeah. So, and I kind of advertise it as 8 to 10, just depending on if you want your slabs to touch each other or if you want a little bit of space. Like, I prefer a little bit of space, but you could put 10 easily. So you could definitely do 10. The real reason it's like the actual size, and this is, again, me just being very honest with you and your listeners, is if you look over this shoulder, I have these kind of cabinets here, and it was the size that fit into my cabinets. But the original one that I made was over here. So this one fits like, I think 18 cards. But when I started asking people and posting on some of these, like Facebook groups are great for cards because you can buy and sell and trade, but you can also get a lot of good feedback. 10 was the number. Like when I was asking people, like, do you want bigger? Do you want smaller? Everyone kind of came back to like, oh, like I have my top 10 yeah. or like, and it came up more times than not. So that's why I settled on the size. I don't have plans for a bigger one or a smaller one because I do think they are really easy to just kind of stack up and down and combine and mix and match. Doesn't mean never, but right now it's just the buy a bunch and put them together.
There you go. Well, he says if he did that, the beast will just get filled up again.
Nice.
Skeppy wants to know, do you have an affiliate program or influencer opportunities?
So nothing official. Everything, all the folks that did promote it for me, nobody was paid. You know, it was all just because they... And which I love. Like, I love that I can look at you guys in the eyes and say, like, everybody who promoted it did so because they were like, I like this product. I would use it. I think everyone else should. But if people are looking to get the word out, just send me a DM. I would love to work with you. I mean, I think going back to why I like the hobby, this has allowed me to just connect with so many creative and innovative people that, yes, like, they're creative and innovative in the hobby, but they also, they're kind of just creative in general. That goes for anybody listening. Like, if anybody ever wants to just talk shop, talk hobby, just send me a DM. Like, I would love to just talk about furthering the hobby and making sure it's strong. So nothing official, but always happy to talk.
What's your favorite card in your collection? I'm looking at all these behind you and I'm like, you have so many awesome cards. What's your favorite back there?
Coming from you, that means a lot. I would say my favorite, only because of the story behind it, is it's a cliche answer. It's my 86 Fleer Jordan. I'm a 80s 90s kid, so obviously Jordan was God. But the reason that card is my favorite is because in 1996, Beckett came out with a 10-year anniversary of the 86 Fleer Jordan. So I was 14 years old. I was working at the baseball card shop and it just kind of hit. I was like, I need that card. Actually, I knew this would come up. So I had this Beckett from 1996 was the, like, this card came out 10 years ago. Like, is it going to be the card and a whole write up on it? So I was like, I need that card. Like, I always wanted it, but this was like I need it. But I knew there were a lot of counterfeits out there. And, I had people come into the shop with fake ones. Like, I've seen fake ones. So I said, I need to get it great. I need a graded version. And again, like, I had no graded cards, but I was like, for this one, I need a graded card. And I went to a bunch of card shows, local. No one had a graded Jordan rookie. So it was just hard. And eBay wasn't really a thing yet. So I bought my 86 Fleer Jordan off an AOL chat forum when I was 14 with money I saved up from work. And I went to the bank and I got a money order and I sent a money order to some random guy. And I didn't tell my parents about it. So I did, before I got it, I told my dad, and he was livid because he was like, you just sent this person cash. Like, you send them a money order, not even a check. Like, you're never going to see that card. And a week later, I got it in the mail and it was in the PSA slab. And, you know, I got to tell my dad, like, you know, see, you got to trust the people in the hobby. And yeah. I still have it. And that card during the peak went up to an amount that all my friends were like, you have to sell it. You're in that card for $800. And I was like, I don't care if it goes down to zero. Like, I am never, ever selling that card. So that's my number one.
Yeah. As you said, maybe a little cliche because it's such a important popular card.
It's the why behind it.
And yeah. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that at all for me. Mm-hmm. Ken mentions that he sent you an email. Very good. Very good. Happy to.
Just on Instagram.
He's on there. He's obviously, as yeah. he says. Eric S., my family and I are currently building a custom roll top looking desk that is for storing graded cards. Interesting. Nice. Is that something, Eric, that you're planning to scale and actually start a business, or is this a one-off for yourself? I'm just curious, but be interesting to see what yeah. that looks like for sure. Yeah. For sure. Okay. So let's talk a bit about what's going on hobby wise. Cause there's been, yeah. There's been a lot of news, and unless there's anything else slab shelf that you want to talk about, John, anything else slab shelf that you want to get out there for people to know?
No, just, like I said, especially if you're listening and you've ordered one, you know, in addition to me just being very, very thankful and appreciative, I just can't wait to see what people's cards look like on a slab shelf. So once you get it, or if you're ordering one tonight, once you get it, definitely post, tag slab shelf, tag me, hashtag slab shelf. Cause I want to see people's collections and what they want to put on it. If you are a dealer, we're doing wholesale. So contact me about if you want to carry this in your shop for your customers. If you're a breaker and you want this on your in the background of your breaking, contact me. Or if you just, again, want to talk hobby, I'm around. So, we could definitely talk hobby. And there's a couple things going on newsworthy in the hobby these days.
Right on. Good. Okay, good. So Eric lets us know it's a one-off just for them. Very cool, Eric. Oops.
That's how I started, so you never know.
Yeah, true enough. But put a picture on Instagram, Eric, and tag me so I can make sure to see it when it's done. Mm-hmm. Tyler gets a kick out of the AOL story. David French says, where are you out of that you're always so late? Always enjoy. David, I am out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, just north of Montana. So it's only 10 after 10 for me, even though I know it's after midnight on the East Coast.
That's all right. Oh, good. I got my coffee. I'm fine.
You're fine.
Third or fourth cup today.
We got John on the East Coast here, but that's why I'm always so late, David. Appreciate that, though. So hobby, let's just talk a bit of hobby news. I want to go for about at least 5 more minutes here, John. Make sure we do about an hour before we, and to anybody who's maybe joined late, we are doing a shorter evening tonight just because I am under the weather. So we did an hour earlier with Michael Osaki, and we're going to do about an hour here with John. So, but thanks everybody for joining. And reminder, tomorrow I will be live on the collectible YouTube channel with Eric Myers as our guest. That should be a fun episode there as well. So the Fanatics news, obviously it came out a while ago. You know, someone made a comment earlier that have you been in contact with Michael Rubin yet? Maybe he wants to own your business too. Who knows? But what are your thoughts around all that? Just, I mean, you know, obviously everybody's talking about this. There's no shortage of content on this topic.
Yeah.
But I don't think you've been out there talking about it publicly yet as far as what your sort of views are. So interested to hear what you think about that. And, you know, the fact that Fanatics has these licenses coming soon, but also his comments on CNBC the other day.
Yeah. So my first take is really, I'm excited for the potential that's out there, right? Like of where this could go. And my advice to everybody whose head is kind of exploding, you know, and having knee-jerk reactions is just let it play out, right? Like we really have no idea what exactly is going to happen. But if I'm the best advice, not that Michael Rubin needs or Josh Lou or any of these guys need my advice, but just listen to your customers, right? Like if you really listen to collectors of like what they think will be in the best interest of the hobby, and what will keep this hobby strong for a long time, making sure kids are involved and it's not just, you know, kind of ending with a certain generation. I think you just need to listen to that. And then based on that, make your decisions, right? Like it's to me, local card shops are always going to be a thing. Like the headlines the last couple of days have been like, oh, like Fanatics is going to put the local card shop out of business. Well, if the local card shop is doing what they're supposed to be doing and doing it the right way, like I know a lot of them are, like they're going to be fine. Like, and there's going to be a place for them in the hobby, like in the hobby ecosystem. But maybe some of the card shops that are just in it to squeeze people for money and aren't really doing it the right way, maybe it's okay if those types of card shops aren't around. So I think my first gut reaction is everybody take a deep breath. And my second is if the hobby speaks up and is like, here's what we need, hopefully Fanatics listens and hopefully that's what they do. But what I'm really excited for, and I think you're on the same page too, is like, is there the potential for them to maybe also get the Upper Decks of the world? And then, you know, we can get into some of these, retro, you know, basketball, like the 90s inserts. Can we get some, you know, paying homage to those cards? So I think that I'm really excited about. It's like that kind of stuff gets me very anxious in a good way.
Yeah, no, well said. I think the takeaway there for me is like, let it play out, because that's really all we can do. But the thing that you know, for content creators is that this is a gold mine for us.
Oh, because yeah.
We're going to have so much to talk about every time that Michael Rubin or Josh Luber makes a statement or speaks publicly, or with the leagues or the PAs, there's going to be comments from all of us, from the peanut gallery, right? We're going to have all these comments, all these videos to make and talking about to speculate. And that's part of the hobby right now, is just having fun speculating and watching people speculate, listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos, all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Right? For sure. Yeah, for sure. One of the things that I think a lot of people may have, that I think has escaped a lot of people, is that, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this. Really, you know, aside from, you know, the secondary market, which he said he kind of wants to get involved in, if not take altogether, which I think is that's a big task. But really, everything that Fanatics is going to do has to do with the cards that they make from whatever year, 2023, 4, 5, 6 and forward. Mm-hmm. There's still the whole body of work from like 1888 till 2020 something.
Yeah. They're not erasing that.
What's that?
They're not erasing that. Like that exists. No,
those are still out there. People are still going to want to, you know, touch, hold, feel those cards, buy and sell them. So, I mean, and I don't know that everyone's going to all of a sudden send their collections to the Fanatics vault or whatever they may want to do, or sell them on theirs. Although they may get that, they may take eBay's business. I suppose that's a possibility.
Yep.
But I think it comes back to really now. I know a lot of people like putting sets together every year. That's a very important and major part of the hobby. So those people are affected. But if you're not a set builder, if you're not putting together the Topps baseball set every year or the Prism basketball set every year, you're still going to be able to have your hobby if you can focus on older cards pre the Fanatics era. I don't know, kind of some thoughts I've had about it. Anything to add on or comment on that?
No, I said earlier, I don't collect a ton of new stuff. Like I'll dabble in it every now and then. So, you know, even if they stopped making cards, like I still have my targets that I'm looking for. And like, I could still go after them no matter what. The one thing I do like about Fanatics saying that they're going to take over the secondary market, take over storage, take over grading, is competition is a good thing. Like if that makes those other sectors raise their game a little bit, and listen, honestly, there's been parts of the hobby that have gotten kind of complacent and a little bit lazy, because I think they didn't really need to put as much effort in. So if this makes everybody a little bit sharper, because they know there's some competition coming, I don't think that's a bad thing. So So we got to see how that plays out too. But I agree. All the history of cards isn't going anywhere. That's what this is all built on. So let's, you know, always stay true to that and then be excited and optimistic, maybe cautiously optimistic of where this is all going to go.
Cautiously optimistic is a great attitude to have. Sure. I feel like a lot of people are cautiously pessimistic right now, but yeah, that's okay too.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. Yeah, so I am too, but I have a bit there. I have a bit of pessimism, but I also think that we're talking about lots of money, smart people who are probably going to listen to the people, to the customers. Yeah. I hope. I shouldn't say probably. What do I know? But I hope. We will see. We will see. Fred makes a comment about you. This guy gets it.
Nice. Freddie. Charles
Murphy lives in the suburbs of Philadelphia. We haven't had any card shops locally in 20 years. That's too long.
Yeah.
Eric S. predicts Fanatics turns away the card community and Topps will come back. Maybe owned by
interesting take. Yeah.
Fanatics. Yeah. JG says Fanatics is too big to fail. I mean, I kind of see that a little bit, but they have to listen to the right people. They have to, it can't, the team has to be built, right? And I think they're not, I think they're probably going to build a team that has some hobby experience, yeah, I would think, right?
Yep.
David French says, would love an occasional hobby plays from your awesome channel. Thank you, David French. What do you mean by hobby plays? Are you saying cards to buy, cards to sell? If you are, it's just not really what I do, but I appreciate it. Maybe something, maybe some sort of spin on it. So I appreciate the feedback. Here we are with someone asking, you know, telling you what you want. And you're like, well, we'll see. It's not really what I do.
Yeah, but yep. Listen to the people.
Listen to the people. Exactly. Yep. Let me know what kind of plays you're talking about, David, and I'd certainly entertain it. Troy says, yeah, anything can fail. They also said the Titanic was unsinkable. Eric says, if I'm Topps and Panini and see the cliff coming, I am mass producing like there's no tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, I think that they're already printing at capacity, so there's no more printing they can do, right? The last couple of years, the printers are backed up. There's really no more they can do. But if I'm Topps or Panini, I'm a local card shop or I'm a distributor, I'm starting to try to reach out to Fanatics, try to reach out to Josh Luber, try and see how can we fit in once this happens from a new product standpoint. Otherwise, we're going to become vintage sellers or, you know, pre-Fanatics era sellers of singles and that sort of thing.
Yep.
I mean, there's other opportunities there, of course. Your sports cards don't have to be the only thing. Well, here, Ken, who owns some shops, pipes in, says, I'm optimistic. Even with owning hobby shops, many doors will open as others will close. That's the attitude right there. And Ken owns, I think it's four hobby shops he owns. But that last sentence that's the sentence of somebody who understands the way the world works.
There's always opportunity. Yeah.
That's right. Many doors will open as others will close. That should be the title of this episode. Not that ever.
That's what we're working with, Ken. I like Ken.
No, Ken, you nailed it. I think you nailed it exactly. That's why you're a successful businessman, because you get that. And it speaks to being able to adapt and pivot and, you know, not just throw in the towel because everything you know is changing. If everything you know is changing, maybe you need to change along with it and realize that last sentence. Yeah, I really like that comment. All right. Anything else you want to talk about, John?
No, I just chat. I just want to thank you again. I want to be a multiple time after hours guest. So, and I know we got to keep Slab Shelf going, but you know, I want to be like the Ryan Nolans of the world and be your maybe your hobby entrepreneur correspondent. So I thank you for all you do for the hobby. I just always enjoy your content, and hopefully I can come back on.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you. And if you start traveling to 52 shows a year, you can also be the Ryan Nolan of the show.
Yeah. I love Ryan. Another guy who I got to meet at the National for the first time, but I don't have that kind of bandwidth, I think, to head to as many shows, but he's awesome. He's awesome. And then the last thing I have to say again, and I've said it again, but I have to say it as many times as I can, is just thank you again to everybody who has supported from day one. And I really look forward to seeing where this goes and to continuing the support. So thank you for everybody out there who's Slab Shelf fans.
Yeah, that's great, man. For sure. For sure. I just wanted to say about Ryan Nolan, it helps when you're in your 20s, not married, and can travel a lot, right? That makes it a lot easier. Chad Schiffer, thanks for joining. Take care. Victor, I appreciate that. Hit that like button, guys, if you enjoyed the show. If you didn't enjoy the show tonight, hit the like button anyway. I appreciate that. Thank you, Troy. Eric S. says, last time I was at the National, it was on the West Coast, and that will never happen again. Never say never, Eric. Bob's Big Boy says, the Fanatics move is a license consolidation that swings all future acquisition leverage in their favor. They can wait out any brand for buyout as brands only decline in value without a license. Yeah, can't really argue that.
Yep.
Maybe they just pick them up in the meantime. All right, we're going to wind this up. Thanks, everybody, for joining. Apologies for the shorter night this week, but again, I am under the weather. That's not fake.
Feel better.
Going to get some extra sleep this weekend. So thanks, everybody, for joining. I'll be on Collectible Live tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Please check in. Check it out with Eric Myers, also known on Instagram as Howley_Hustle. And we'll be back next week. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Fred. Thank you, Lapper. Appreciate it, guys. John, hang tight 1 second. Everyone else, this is over. Thanks for joining.